everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast on this wonderful, stop smirking Pete, Monday afternoon. My name is Michael Bailey, I'm with Sports Desk Peter Raven, Chief Norwich City Writer for the Eastern Daily Press, Paddy Davitt, to review Norwich City winning the opening game of the season for the first time in 14 years. And I think, Pete, as we just found out, you were about 12.
That was when I first started here, that's how long ago it was, and I've been here forever.
Yeah, that is. That's not just you who feels that, Pete. Yeah, no internet, no Twitter, nothing. The world has completely changed since Norwich last won on the opening day of the season. I don't think any of us know quite how to deal with it. Paddy, have you recovered from our first jaunt on the road of the season?
Loved it, mate. Loved it. Bring it on. Let's have some more. You know, winning games and scoring goals. It can be done if you wear a Norwich shirt. Which wasn't the case last season. I'm being flippant, obviously, but no, couldn't have asked for much more, really, bar a sloppy goal at the end, but let's not split hairs. Just what the doctor ordered, but it'll get tougher.
We'll definitely split hairs later on. We won't put that off totally. But can we, Norwich City fans, now expect this every week, Pete? This is it. Norwich City are too good for the Championship. They're top of the league, and they're going to win the league, and everything's going to be great.
They are too good for the Championship, but don't expect it every week because there aren't going to be many teams as bad as Blackburn were. But you can only be what's put in front of you, and four goals while we're still looking for another striker. Nothing to complain about apart from the one goal.
Yeah, maybe another striker or another two strikers, perhaps. I mean, let's get this straight then, shall we? Blackburn were terrible on that performance. Owen Coyle, who wasn't particularly popular when he was appointed, will do well to survive beyond Christmas. The side, as without parachute payments, finished 15th last year. There's a clear trajectory as to what's happening there. Norwich won't have many easier afternoons in terms of who they're coming up against. Yes,
accepted, but you know, they still had to go out and, I mean, do the business, and took an unbelievable goal to get them on their way, and then it was a bit like the floodgates open. But if they hadn't been at it and they hadn't looked as vibrant going forward, then, you know, it's not, I don't think it's a given that, yeah, Norwich would have won the game, but they made it into quite an easy afternoon, and so you have to give them credit, as bad as Blackburn were. But clearly, you know, 11,000 home fans for your first home game of the season, that club is heading out of that division at a rate of knots.
It's like 10,000 after the third goal went in.
There were people leaving very early, weren't they? And of course, don't forget, Paul Lambert was out of there pretty sharpish, wasn't he? So I think we probably got a little insight into why that was the case. Four unanswered goals until Blackburn got their consolation. Norwich were 3-0 up at half-time. The quality of the goals, I love these goals. Now, I know that there was no pressing and there was no harrying, but the way they worked it, the fourth goal was a joy. As Pad mentioned, Jacob Murphy's turn initially and then strike for the opening goal. It's great to watch.
It's Barcelona-esque, wasn't it? I remember, I think it was Chris Lakey said that when Wes scored against Coventry, it was like...
What are you bringing that up for?
Because he just said that the defending was sort of what you'd expect in pre-season. No one was pressing or he wasn't being challenged. And then you wouldn't expect that when the season started. But that seems to be the case again with most of the goals. It was sort of training ground routines that pulled off every time. Lovely to watch.
And we won't mention Coventry. I thought we were going to get away without mentioning that game at all, Paddy. The Paddy Cup, wasn't it?
That one, Peter, is where's he learnt his trade last season for 12 months, and now he's come back a man.
I mean, it's interesting, and some people have picked up on it, that Jacob is the man that Alec turned to first, when I think 2 years ago it would have been Josh who was the head, and before that, possibly the other way around again.
Very, very interesting. And we thought, I mean, we were surprised when we saw him in the Hanover starting lineup for Norwich, obviously. But then 10, 11, 12 minutes and he's getting hooked a la Juan Mata in the Community Shield on Sunday. You thought, well, there's no chance this guy's going to be anywhere near it for Blackburn. So credit to him, credit to Alex Neil as well, because it's paid off in a big way. I mean, he looked so comfortable in those surroundings and he scored one. He could have conceivably had another two. And, you know, you don't want to overhype the guy, but he was basically unplayable. And now what you get with him, what you'll get with all this young talent we keep hearing about is massive inconsistency. So don't expect Jacob Murphy to turn that in every week. But if he did it more weeks than not, then he's going to affect games in Norwich's favour in the Championship. So, yeah, that I think for me, I mean, we know what Wes is about. We knew what Naismith was about. Okay, we haven't really seen it in a Norwich shirt until Saturday. But Jacob Murphy there, I think that was the biggest surprise for me, that he's basically taken his chance and just said to Alex Neil, I want to be in this team. I don't want to be in and around it. And then basically get into January and he's out on loan somewhere, because him and his brother, they have to break that cycle. You know, at some point, they're no longer potential. They are actual bona fide established first team options. And the manager said to us in the summer that he sat him down and he said, this is the season now. No Redmond, Jarvis is injured, so he's going to miss the first few months of the campaign. There's a vacancy there, go and grab it. And boy, did he do that Saturday.
And I think it came up in the Q&A for me, if Alec Neil can judge when each player is kind of coming in and out of form, you've got more than enough youngsters there that you can get the best out of these guys if you pick your moments right. I know I make that sound easy, I'm sure it's definitely not that. And the thing I really like is that when you have a side that's relying on Wes and Stephen Naismith, and I'm sure Alex Pritchard going forward to pick a defence because they're going to be sitting back, just to have the option on the pitch of someone who can run in behind and you can play in and who's lightning quick and can have that impact as well and can clearly hit one from 25 yards as well, it's means that the opposition are sitting there thinking, whoa, and they're in two minds about how they're going to defend things.
It also surprised me having those three, like Wes, Naismith and Jacob all starting, especially away from home. I guess if teams see that lineup, I think, yeah, they're coming in to have a go. It's already a bit psychological, isn't it? That's put one foot in the camp for Norwich. But to have the likes of Pritchard on the bench and Josh and Madison as well, is that squad depth, it's everyone's banging on about a strike and that we've signed too many midfielders, but it might not be the case. You're going to have to swap them around. There's a lot more games this season. There are going to be injuries, there are going to be suspensions, and it's, I think everyone's in the summer, we haven't done a great deal of transfer business, but we probably haven't needed to, because basis of a squad that got promoted like 2 years ago is still there. With these extra additions, it is just the strikers. Maybe we need one or two, but so far so good. I know it's only one game. Someone else said that Jacob seems to have beefed up a bit. You boys see that?
Well, I noticed that against Peterborough. They both seem to be a lot fuller and
not
thicker.
Not Gary beefed up, but actual a bit of muscle to him.
Yeah, no, there probably is an element of that. I mean, what, they are 21, so...
Still so young, isn't it, as well, really?
But physically, I mean, you look at them too, look at Godfrey as well in pre-season. These lads look physically... The demands of particularly the championship, the monotonous churn of the games, that shouldn't be an issue to them. Whereas what I would say with maybe a Madison, you wouldn't quite put them in the same category physically, and the manager acknowledged that. He said before, when he signed him and then loaned him back to Cover, I distinctly remember him saying one of the first things they've got to do is work on his physique, because okay, where, you know, you could say, well, is he not a similar sort of build to Wes? But you know, Wes is gone battle hardened, and he's been around the block now a number of years, and Madison, he just looks a little bit lightweight, and Canos probably as well, but you know, that'll come, because Pritchard isn't exactly the biggest, he's possibly the smallest footballer I've ever seen, but he certainly has ability.
He does. We saw a little bit of it in the closing stages on Saturday, and we will no doubt see more too. Should we just do the splitting hairs before we hear from some of the protagonists? Let's split the hairs for a bit, Pad. I mean, you want to get into good habits. Are we not too worried because the game was won and it concentration levels dip and, you know, it's the first game of the season, it was hot, blah, blah, blah. Are we okay to say that? Or are we a bit like, well, hang on, we did see a bit of this last year and it sort of don't want it to carry on?
To me, it wasn't so much the context of the game, because the game was won. So it wasn't that context of that game, but it was more they looked vulnerable aerially. From a big ball crossed to the far post, Pinto's been out-jumped. Ruddy's not exactly covered himself in glory either, albeit yet there was a striker down its feet as well, maybe distracted him a touch. But so that vulnerability there, now that you move that on to, dare I say it, a team who basically base their game on something like that, like an Ipswich, then if you're vulnerable to the aerial bombardment, then that is a weakness and that needs addressing, I think. But in the context of Saturday, it made no difference other than probably irked the manager and his defenders. But moving forward, I said it on the Q&A a bit earlier, I don't think there's too many teams who will play through Norwich, because Norwich is superior in terms of their midfield options. So more often than not, it's going to be direct, it's going to be long, it's going to be balls into the box. And if they're as weak as they were in that particular moment, then they're going to concede goals. So as good as they were going forward, you know, just a nice little reminder what a championship's all about, I think.
And again, it's a situation where you end up having the fullback on the striker for a ball in the box when you're sat there thinking, well, it's Anthony Stokes who's just come on, should not one have closer or Bennett be on him?
Yeah, fair comment, yeah. Obviously, Danny Graham's in the mix there as well, but the organisation wasn't right. Take it back, as Alex Neil did. Stephen Whittaker didn't close the defender down, I think, across the ball quick enough. You know, these are all little links in the chain which together, you know, contribute to them conceding that goal. And but in their defence, no pun intended, there was a 10-minute period probably just after the goal where they did throw a few corners and free kicks into the box, and Norwich defended them, you know, to the extent where they didn't concede again. So you know, I think that'll come, but you know, they're going to be so dominant going forward, you just don't want any complacency to set in when inevitably, even in a game as one-sided as that, home team will have a little flurry, and if you're going to concede in a little flurry period, then that isn't a sign of a team who goes to places is very tough to beat and then nicks one, which you'll have to do at times during the rest of the season.
You'd like to think the story of two seasons ago is fresh in everyone's minds, because there were lots of good periods and lots of sticky moments that emphasise just what this division is all about. Shall we hear from Stephen Naismith and Alec Neil? Yeah.
I think it was important that we started off well. I think we know the qualities we've got as a group, and certainly at this level we should be causing teams problems, you know, but I think it's an easy thing to say that. I think it's another thing doing it, and I think what we've done is, I think this is the first win in like 14 years, somebody's reminded me, in the first start of the season. I think that may have been you. So yeah, listen, really pleased. I thought the players were great, I thought their attitude throughout the game was great, and we got our just results because of that.
Obviously, the first game of the season is about getting a result and secondary getting a performance, but I think we had everything today. We're disappointed, obviously, to lose a goal, but on the whole, if you look at the game, it's a great first day of the season, and it shows that our intent and what we're wanting to do this season. And I think everybody in the team and who came on as a sub knew exactly the roles and what we've been working on, and it worked out well for us.
My job's to get them sort of physically ready, but mentally ready as well. You know, and the one thing we want to do is show everybody how good a team we are, and the fact we want to get back into the Premier League where we think we belong. You know, so the only way to do that is to win as many games as we can. And all we've done today is make a good sort of marker really in the first game, but we need to take that into next week now.
We obviously played in the Premier League last year, and that's the aim for most teams at the top of the division, and we are no different. So you've got to go out there and stamp your authority on the game, and I think that's what we've done. Obviously, getting the early goals makes it a bit more relaxed, and you can play the way you want to. We maybe had a spell in the end of the first half, start of the second half, we weren't at the same intensity, but it soon came back, and we killed the game off with the fourth goal.
Okay, let's touch on Martin Olsen. He is still at the club. West Ham have just bought a new left back. He was taken off with a hamstring strain, which sounded a bit precautionary, but are we expecting Ols to be around for the remaining 2 and a bit weeks?
Well, if his agent's to be believed, no. But then agents only make money when their players move. We haven't heard from the lad himself, but there is similar talk last time we went down, wasn't there? And it's now 2 years on since then, and his contract must be winding up. So what do you cash in, or do you have someone on your books who's looking to move away and obviously make a bit of money out of it? But he's in that division, he's a quality left back, so I think keep him while you can. And if he just comes out and says, oh, I'm going to commit to Norwich, sign a new contract, fair enough, but I don't think he will he?
But he seemed relaxed enough wandering around in the ground afterwards. But what do you reckon, Pat?
Yeah, I think Pete summed up quite well, really. I mean, his contract situation, he's out of contract next summer, so in theory this January he can sign a pre-contract and go for zero in terms of a club making any money on him. So that has to be a factor from Norwich's point of view as much as the player. I think it will get to a point where, as with West Ham, they have a valuation, and if a club meets that, then it's a tipping point, and I think he goes. But because the alternative is, as I say, you know, you basically lose a commodity which would command even now a few million pounds for zero. But Pete Riley says the flip side is if it's about getting back up at the first attempt, you won't find a better replacement than him in the Championship. So, you know, that's the dilemma. But Alex Neil made it clear the lad wants to play in the Premier League, and that's being brutally honest. He wouldn't be alone. All those Norwich players want to play in the Premier League, but he wasn't good enough last season, nor was that squad, hence he's in the Championship now. You know, that's ultimately where you are with him and a lot of those players. You know, they don't want to be in the Championship, but that's where they are at the minute. So you either you knuckle down and you give it a crack, or you reach an agreement where it suits both parties. I mean, these things all won't work if it's just in Martin Olsen's interests and it's not in Norwich's interests. So until both parties are satisfied and there's a buying club who are also in the equation, then he's not going anywhere. But would it surprise me if he's gone by September 1st? No.
What you don't want is the situation of him going on deadline day and no cover coming in. If he's going to go, you get rid of him soon and then use the money to buy someone else. But if he leaves at 11 o'clock on that evening, and then who do we go with at left back?
Hopefully that won't happen. Hopefully the new chief executive, who started work today, Jez Moxey, will make sure that doesn't happen. He'll have a few tasks ahead of him now he's in the role. Should we touch on the captaincy? Because again, this seems to be something that fans are talking about. I'm sure you did, Pad. If several people asking me about it. Johnny Howson was the captain on Saturday because Russell Martin was injured, so he wasn't playing. I mean, there is no real debate, is there, away from the fans? The simple fact is Russell Martin's captain, and that's that. And if he's not fit to play, someone else will wear the armband, and that's it. And I guess the fans maybe just need to accept that for the time being. Or can you understand the fact that they almost, some of them seem to be demanding change in a way?
I don't see it. I just do not see what the issue is. You know, what is the issue? If the guy is good enough in the 11 to play, then I'm talking about Russell Martin, then he'll be in the 11. If he's not good enough, then he won't be. And if he's not, then somebody else will have the captain's armband. That is it in a nutshell. I mean, all this about leadership and tub thumping and John Terry and setting an example. Well, Norwich haven't, you could conceivably say, given they've had two relegations in 2 years, they haven't had enough of those anyway. Whether it's Russell Martin or whoever, but putting an armband on somebody else, is that going to then install leadership and drive when inevitably there'll be sticky games when their backs are against the wall? So, you know, for me, I just don't see it. I'm just completely nonplussed by the whole debate. If he's good enough to be in 11, he'll lead the team out. If he's not, or if he's injured as he was Saturday, it'll be Johnny Howson. End of.
Oh, John Ruddy, who wore it once Johnny Howson got taken off, but pachish.
Captaincy doesn't mean what it used to, did it? I remember being a kid, it was the leader and the voice of the team, but if you've got characters in that dressing room, they're going to speak up whether they're captain or not. It's a non-issue for me. I'm not bothered who wears it.
I tell you now, having got covered a lot, well, all those pre-season games, that you listen to Stephen Naismith, he is the biggest moaner there is on that pitch. Now, whether he's got an armband on or not, he will be shouting and conjo-, and I don't mean against the opposition, I mean to his own players, he's always on at them. So for me, it's as Pete says, if you've got people of that nature on the pitch, it's irrelevant who leads them out at the head of the line, who wears the captain armband, who tosses the coin. Irrelevant.
Brilliant, spot on, couldn't put it better myself. We have, what is it, it's the 8th today, so 23 days of the transfer window remaining. Now, I know you love the transfer window, Pad. Are you almost as much
as the captaincy issue, Mark?
are you feeling like Norwich are going to get this business done? Now, Alec has certainly seemed very calm, sort of either side of the game on Saturday, given that he, you know, missed out on Ross McCormack and all that sort of stuff. So he comes across as if he's on top of it, and of course, you know, it helps when you've just scored 4 goals.
Yeah, I mean, and one of those was Cameron Jerome on the score sheet. So, because you can flip that the other way, you can imagine now sat here on Monday, if they'd have been beaten and Jerome's missed about 5 chances, then there'd have been a firestorm about, you know, why aren't they signing? We need to sign. So a result of that nature with him on the score sheet just takes it down a notch or two. But that aside, clearly you cannot go into this season with him and Lafferty as your senior strikers. I'm not including Naismith in that. I'm not including Carl Morris in that, who could both do jobs. But your two senior front men is not enough. You know, they might be an embarrassment of riches creative midfield wise, certainly isn't in the striking department, and they need to address it, and they will, because there's no way Alex Neil, meticulous as he is going to go to September the 1st with no new strikers in the building. If he has to go possibly down the loan route, then he will do. He said that to us on Friday. It's not his preferred option, but he would do that. So, you know, worst case scenario, there's going to be a lone striker coming to build in. But I would think the way he was talking and reading between the lines, it'll be one plus one, one lone, one permanent. And, you know, clearly they showed enough ambition and desire that they were well in the race for McCormack for weeks and weeks. And the figures we all know, so they were willing to go a good way down the road. So there's the money's there, basically. The money's there, the desire's there. They just have to get one over the line now. But as I say, we're not sat here 24 hours out from the deadline night, are we? So, you know, there's no need to panic yet, I don't think.
We've finally got a mention of Naki Wells on the rumour mill. Delighted by that, I bet.
Naki Wells.
I think he's the guy you've been trumpeting regular intervals.
In the know.
If only you could see the beaming smile on Paddy's face. Newcastle and Villa both lost. Pete, what did you make of that?
Not a huge shock, is it? I mean, I know everyone's tipped Newcastle to win the league, but they've not been down there for a while, have they? So it's Norwich's old hat at it now.
Yeah. I think, yeah, that's one way of putting it.
Yeah, I expected Newcastle to get something against Fulham because they didn't do anything last year, did they? But Villa had a slightly tougher game against Sheffield Wednesday, so.
I mean, I get the impression Fulham are going to be a bit better than they were last year. I think Jovanovic is a very good manager, and they've got a few decent players there. So, I mean, when I say that, I mean like top 10, maybe pushing for the playoffs. Sheffield Wednesday, they'll definitely be pushing for the playoffs. The playoff finalists last year, they said they beat Villa. They are down here next Saturday, Pad. It's going to be very interesting, that game, I think.
Yeah, it should be, yeah. And I've tipped them up to be in the top two, but I've got to be honest, I turned over having watched the Community Shield and caught the last 15-20 minutes of that game, and I don't know if that was indicative of the previous 70, but they were two very poor sides, very poor. I mean, it was literally just you lump it, we'll lump it. There wasn't a great deal of quality on show, and the goal itself was a howler from the Villa keeper. So it was, you know, on that evidence, then I having seen Norwich at Ewood Park, I would think Norwich would take care of business this Saturday. But yeah, they, having said that, as you rightly said, they've strengthened to a team who got all the way to the playoff final, so they know what it's about in this league, and I think they'll certainly be a stiffer test than Blackburn. But you know, I still would back Norwich all day long to see them off, but might be one of those where it's going to be the odd goal in three, something like that, I think.
We'll see. We'll have all the usual stuff over the weekend. It's a 5:30 kickoff, don't forget. But our new improved match day service from Friday night to Sunday night. Plethora of things at pinken.com and all our other channels. Pinken Show, of course, Mustard TV on Wednesday night. Anything you want to flag up, Pete?
If you want to leave us a message, go on the podcast page and record your thoughts on the game or anything else you want to discuss with us, and we'll try and include it in the podcast.
Audio, your audio on the podcast.
You just press a button, speak into your phone, and then send it. It's that simple. It's quicker than typing.
And I guess it would be quite nice if we weren't backed by the notion that Norwich had to lose for people to start ranting. It'd be nice if we had people really excited on there.
Yeah, but I guess people don't phone up when it's all going too well.
Or do they? Let's see. All right, well, let's wrap this up. Thank you all for listening. Pad, Pete, thanks for your time. And we'll be back on the other side of Sheffield Wednesday, where hopefully it'll just be a continuation of this wonderful, record-breaking opening day. Bye for now.